Welcome to the Well and Witchy podcast. I'm your host, Britt Epley, and I'm an eclectic witch, wellness and mindset coach, healer, and spiritual mentor. If you're looking to fearlessly rise up and be the woman you were destined to be and live your best life with both wellness and spiritual flows, then you are in the right place. Think of this podcast as your go-to for all things magic, inspiration, and empowerment. I'll be spilling the tea about witchcraft, spell work, spirituality, intuitive wellness, self-love, and much more. Leave it to me to help provide you with the tools and resources to unlock the inner goddess and power within you, hone your sacred craft, and live life in a more meaningful and magical way. I am so grateful that our paths have crossed today and you are here. Thank you so much for pushing play. Now let's do this, witches. Hello and welcome back to the Well and Witchy podcast. I'm your host, Britt Epley, and we're on season two. So let's get excited. That's me trying to imitate those like hype man fog horns. I should probably just like insert the sound myself or something. So anyway, I'm hype. I'm stoked. I am fired up. I know 100% that it has been a while. It's been a minute since I've released an episode. It's been a minute since I've truly shown up in full force on the interwebs. And I owe you a whole separate episode to deep dive that and have that conversation. But the too long didn't read version was that I had to take some time away to deal with some burnout and to really integrate some healing modalities into my life to bloom in my own time and to do some really deep and dark shadow work and fight through many number of things to now have more energy and purpose and be in more alignment to keep creating the content that I do for you wonderful witchy beings. So again, we're season two now. In 2020, when I first started this podcast, I had no idea I'd be here. I do all the podcast creation myself, from scheduling guests to reaching out to pitching, to recording, editing, all the social assets, all the copy, all the show notes. I do everything. And it is sometimes incredibly hard to manage when life is hard. And I'm not saying that I'm making an excuse or if things get hard, I push the podcast off, but I really was in a hard place and I'm feeling so much better now, which is why I'm so excited because I have so much lined up for you. Today's episode alone is just exceptional, educational, inspiring, and I'm excited for you to hear it. But just know season two is going to be dope. I'll have another podcast episode talking more about it. And yes, so let's dive into today's episode. My expert guest is Jane Grody of Nashville's Tertiary Site. Tertiary Site is where, if you remember back in January, I got my own aura reading and photograph taken. So Thomas gifted me for my birthday a partner's reading for the two of us, and we went over to East Nashville where we'll always be hanging out, just right down the road from Honey Tree where we frequent all the time, to Jane's business, again called Tertiary Site. Like, our readings blew our minds, and it's really cool to think about in terms of like what your aura looks like and how that has an impact on you. And Jane and I will be talking more about this later, but if you're interested in looking at my auras, they're on my Instagram. And if you go to Jane's Instagram, which is linked in the show notes, you will see a wide array of many different auras. So check that out. So what is Tertiary Site and what does Jane do? Well, working at the junction of mysticism and technology to make the metaphysical tangible, Jane at Tertiary Site is Nashville's aura photography pop-up. Tertiary Site is an experience that invites people to have their aura portrait taken as a tool for self-empowerment. Through aura photography, Tertiary Site gives people the opportunity to learn what their aura expresses about who they are and how they exist in the world so they can live a more authentic life. Truly beautiful and transformational work that Jane does. In this episode, we deep dive on auras, the technology behind the camera, how you can read auras, and this honestly goes back to an episode I did earlier in season one with my friend Erin It's called Baby Witchery and Auras All Around, and Erin shared a little bit about how she can see auras. So we dive deep into that here too, because everyone has different spiritual gifts and everything. But if you're looking to really understand what a aura photograph and reading can give to you, if you are looking to get more into color magic, and honestly, if you're looking to start a more conscious and spiritually aligned business, this is truly the episode for you. That last little bit towards like the second half of the episode, which again, this is a long one, so you better have like stuff to do, you better pause and come back. But towards the end of the episode, Jane and I really talk about some topics in terms of like how to navigate and work in a when the world is just not in a great place, and how we can see red flags from other spiritual folks and offerings that they put out. And we're really on our woken conscious A game here. So, without me rambling any further, you can see nothing has changed from season one. Without me rambling any further, let's please warmly invite Jane Grody to the Well and Witchy podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Well and Witchy podcast. I'm so excited to introduce today's guest, Jane Grody. Welcome to the podcast, Jane.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here.
Yay, I'm so excited to have you. Like I said in the intro, you know, the reading that I got from you was exceptional. And being from Nashville also, or living in Nashville, it's great to know more spiritual and witchy babes. So this has been super fun to get to know you. And I hope that the listeners find auras so enticing, because I do. So anyway.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you for that. I'm so happy to hear that the reading landed with you.
Yeah, yeah. My partner and I took the three photos and we put them like in a triple frame. So now like both of our altar spaces are separated by a window and we just put it in the middle. And we were actually talking, which it's exciting for me to share with you, is that we'd love to get one like every year. So you'll probably see us more often. But just to see like how they change, which we'll get more into, I'm sure.
Of course, it's endlessly fascinating.
I think the first question I have is one I like to ask all my guests right at the jump, is what are your big three, if you know them, if you'd like to share?
I am a Gemini sun, a Virgo rising, and a Capricorn moon.
I'm a Virgo rising.
Oh, yes.
Yay. Mad respect. And you said Gemini sun. I'm an aqua sun, so we got all the air in here too.
Yes.
And then I'm also a Virgo rising, so I got double Virgo, but you know.
Yes. Oh, how interesting. It's really fascinating because I am both a very Gemini and like I have some very hard Virgo tendencies. There was a day when I was like reading some statistics and I was like getting very frustrated. I was like, I want to know more about how they arrived here. I'm just going to have to take a statistics class and figure it out myself. And I was like, oh, that my Virgo rising has risen.
Yeah, I feel like it's very much like, I want to know all the details. I have all the receipts prepared. Like, you will not catch me slipping on a detail. Like, everything has to be organized to the T, planned out to the T. Like, I need it. But then the aqua side, or at least the air side in me, is like, just be free, sweetie. Like, live your life. And I'm like, always conflicted. So I feel like you might feel the same.
I definitely feel that. And especially like with it, as a Gemini, I really do a lot of things in duality. And I will take the very opposite approaches. I will look at very opposite ways of doing things to figure out how I want to do it. A lot of duality.
Nothing wrong with duality. My favorite rune is Dagaz, which is the rune of duality. So anyway, we love it. And I think that, I mean, from where I feel the same way, is like, you can see so many other perspectives other people can't to help you with that decision or those life things that you're trying to figure out. Whereas most people are very like in the zone, which is fine, but
yeah,
explore the options.
Completely.
Which, by the way, how have you been surviving like the retrograde eclipse, full moon, everything?
You know, honestly, I have just been laying very low. I really like the astrologer Chani Nicholas. Now that I say this, I don't know if her last name, but her reading for, I use her app, and her reading for me for the eclipse was literally do nothing. I have been sleeping. I have been making nice meals for myself, and just generally kind of laying it pretty low. I always have like wild dreams around eclipses and full moons. Same. And I don't know why. Okay. I will tell you this. I've had like several dreams about Cardi B.
Ooh. Which I'm here for that.
I like don't know why. It's like so strange. And I had a dream that I like really offended Cardi B the other day. And I woke up so upset because I was like, oh no, not Cardi.
Like I would never.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. I have a dream journal, and I write in it, sometimes I don't. It's very much like a when I remember a relationship, but I will like write down, and every time it's eclipse, like I have the wildest dreams. Mm-hmm. And then I also like to go, I have like a dream book and I look it up online where it's like dream meanings. And I don't think there's a party one, but that's wild.
It is. I haven't done that. I do the gestalt. Dream interpretation. I use that method, and I haven't done it in a while. I always intend to keep a dream journal, but like just don't make it to actually doing it very often. But yeah, it was just a funny dream to have.
That's lit. I feel like all mine right now are, it's good. I feel like when I have eclipse dreams, it's like deja vu for later, or it's kind of like reminding me like, hey, like this is what could happen if you make dumb choices. So for me, it's sometimes like, oh, well, like I'll get a deja vu moment of like, I've been here before. Let's not say the thing we said in the dream. So I don't know. It's weird for me, but I get that a lot.
How interesting, man. Dreams are just endlessly fascinating.
Yes. Dreams, auras, all the things, all the aspects of us that make us do the things.
Absolutely. Yeah. All the things that are like our unconscious minds, which like definitely like your aura isn't your unconscious mind, but it's kind of like this aura is all, and it's like energy just doesn't lie. And so that is like something that is like really fascinating to see.
Yay. Well, tell me a little bit about you. Obviously, we know you run Tertiary Sight. Mm-hmm. You're in Nashville. I'd love to know about just what you do outside of work, even your spiritual journey, wherever you want to go. But what should we know about you?
I run Tertiary Sight, and I have been in Nashville for about 10 years. I have had a true whirlwind of a career where I started off doing theater professionally, wound up in education as a teacher, wound up in corporate social responsibility, and then quit a job for a major tech company to go read auras full time. And it's been really fascinating. I have done a lot of work with various nonprofits. And I used to be involved in running a local makerspace. I used to also be pretty heavily involved in Creatives Day, which is a nonprofit which works on getting creatives the things they need to be creative. And I also coach TED Talks for TEDx Nashville. And I've done that for several years. So I do those things. I read a lot, and I read a lot of time traveling romance novels very specifically.
I love this. Yes.
If it's going to involve time travel in Scotland, I have probably read it.
Ooh, have you watched Outlander? I know it's a book, but it's a show.
Yes. I have watched the show and read the books, and the show is just beautiful.
Do they compare well to the books? Like, would you say it's spot on or not so good? Yeah.
The thing that is like really different is just the sheer length of it. The show is a very pared down version of the book. All of the books are about 7,500 pages of book. And that's just a lot of, that's a lot of book. I think each book is around 1,000 pages, a little less. And that's a lot to fit into 10 to 13 episodes. So there's some interesting points that are different between the show and the book, but I would say especially the first season of the show does a really great job in capturing the essence of it. As far as my spiritual journey, it has been really interesting. And that's kind of why I started with telling you a little bit more about my career. Because when I was studying theater approximately 4 lifetimes ago, it took me a long time to realize that a lot of the theater training I was doing was actually like spirituality work. And like so much of what I was learning in movement for theater was somatics, was learning how to meditate, was learning how to be present in my body. And so these were things that I was kind of like always casually interested in. I had a really weird high school job. And I grew up in Illinois in the middle of nowhere. My hometown had 2 stoplights when I was growing up. I think it has 4 now. My high school job, I worked for a historic reproduction pewter company. And so they made pewter, like metal things, like goblets and plates and candlesticks.
That's so cool.
Very cool. And it was run by these people who were pagans who grew up in Southern California in the 70s. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
I'm already loving this. Yes.
Right. They had done the Ren Faire circuit across the country for like years and years and somehow decided to settle down in the middle of nowhere where I lived. And so I got introduced to all of these ideas that revolve really around paganism and goddess worshiping and nature worshipers in a very interesting way that I like did not grow up with that kind of information until I met these people. And so that really opened up my eyes to a lot more types of spirituality in a way that I can see now, like really influenced me. So that happened, and then all this theater training. And then about seven years ago, some stuff happened and that really like shook me to the core, changed my tectonic plates of being. And in my trying to heal from that, I really, instead of only going to like talk therapy, decided to get more into energy work. And I started going to energy healers. I started reading more spirituality-based self-help books and following a lot of these alternative paths. This was about the time that I was like, I want to track everything I'm doing through aura photos. Because at that time, I really needed some sort of affirmation. Like, I'm a very visual person. I was like, I need a visual affirmation that all of these things I'm doing are doing something. At that time, nobody in the state of Tennessee had one of the cameras that I use. And that was like a big jumping off reason for me to become an aura photographer is because I wanted it so bad. And I really believe that if I wanted it, like other people would want it too.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. Like when we, cause I remember, sorry to interrupt you, but when we went to Boston in December, and of course we were in Salem, Salem's a really witchy town. There were like a handful of aura photographers there. Mm-hmm. And this was right before January when we got our reading done through you. And I remember Thomas being like, hey, like, let's get a reading done now. It'll be cool. And I'm like, no, like, I want to do it in Nashville because it's one of the very few in Tennessee. Like, it's closer to home for us. I feel like it'll be a lot different than just going to like a small place in Salem, which no offense, I need to do a whole other like chat about Salem, but I just felt like it wasn't as authentic as I wanted it to be. So that's awesome that you saw that opportunity and you're like, I'm doing this. If anything, it's for me. Like, I think that's something we all should start doing is like, I love this. I'm going to be open about it. I'm going to do the thing and hope that your people show up, you know, I don't know.
Exactly. And yeah, that was kind of really how I felt. I was like, if I want it so bad. And at this time there's some people who do aura photography traveling and they would come to Nashville maybe once a year. And I just like wanted more. And I should give a caveat here too. So that was all happening, like started its roots 7 years ago in 2015. But I had my first aura photo the week I turned 15. So in June, my first aura photo will be a legal adult. It will be 18 years old.
Wow. What was your first reading like? Like, what did you think back then? Were you just like, cool, put it in my scrapbook? Or did you like cherish it? You were like, oh, wow.
So a little bit of both. I like randomly, I'd never been in a metaphysical store before, wound up in this metaphysical store in Lafayette, Louisiana. And they had an aura camera in the corner. And I was like, yes, please take my expensive photo. I have never heard of this. And they did it and they didn't give readings. So they just like took your photo and were like, have a nice life. So I got my photo and I was like, what does this mean?
What does it mean?
And this is like early days of the internet too. So information about auras really wasn't quite as accessible as it was now or is now. And so I think that also kind of like sparked the interest for me, because I had to do a little bit more work about figuring out what it all meant. And kind of after that first experience, I had some family who lived in the Lafayette, Louisiana area. And so I would be down there semi-regularly, but from then on, pretty much like anytime I went to a city or anytime I could find like a psychic fair or metaphysical fair, I would try to find an aura photographer. And I had it done once, if I was really lucky, more than once, 2 to 3 times a year, every year for a decade before I started thinking about doing it myself, which is just like a really wild thing to think about. Now, I have never been very good at like keeping things. And I definitely used to use, I remember that first aura photo, I used it as a bookmark.
Rad.
And I feel like I still have it, but I haven't been able to find it in like years. So I'm hoping one day I'll open up a book and it will be there. I think there's also a good chance that I gave it away selling used books.
Oh no.
Only time shall tell.
Someone like has it and they're like, I don't know who this woman is, but every time I see this aura, it brings me good feels. So that's beautiful.
Could be. I've always wondered about that.
You never know. You getting your aura photos done frequently. I notice on your Instagram, sometimes you'll post like 2 photos of yourself and sometimes they look really different. So like, how would you say your aura has changed like throughout your life? You know, you're saying you've done a lot of the spiritual things to, you know, get through life, be happy, work, heal yourself. So like, you mentioned that impact. So like, what has that been like?
So it has been really interesting to watch. The first 4 years that I got my aura photographed, I was only one color. So that was like kind of like my teenage years. As I moved into my 20s, I had an aura of color that showed up pretty consistently in almost every photo I had. And it wasn't necessarily always the same. Like it wasn't necessarily always my dominant color or in the same placement, but it was kind of always there. Now that I'm like solidly in my 30s and really like over, you know, since 2018, I have dedicated so much of my time, my energy, my resources to my spiritual practices, to my spiritual growth, and to running like what is a spiritual business, I have been in a place where I see really consistent things with my aura now. And I tend to have what I kind of call like two speeds. I tend to be like very blue or like very rainbow. There's a few variations. Like sometimes I'll do like before and after photos, like me when I'm being me after reading other people's auras all day. And I tend to go from blue to blue and green. Now, I have had, especially over the last, like, oh my gosh, it's May, the last 6 months, I've had a lot more like rainbow. And for me, rainbow tends to show up when I just have a lot going on. And it's really interesting because there's like this perception that like being a rainbow unicorn and having everything working, but at the same time, it's like you have everything firing. And generally for me, that is just happens when I have a lot going on. Not only is it just like a truly wild time to be a person, but I have definitely personally had some like health issues this year that have been like reoccurring and have put me in this like weird scheduling purgatory. And so it's very funny that like some of my most rainbow colors were when I like felt very much so in this like state of purgatory, which is again like a funny duality.
Yeah. Back to duality.
Exactly. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. The rainbow ones, they're cool to look at. I keep saying this to everyone who's listening right now, please go to Jane's Instagram. I'm not trying to be like, go follow, you know, please follow her, please look at this, because like she posts mm-hmm. photos of like every, well not every, but the ones that you think are awesome, and there's like clients she photographs, and it's really cool to just see, like, you know, you can see the person, how they look aesthetically, but also how the aura kind of goes with that sometimes. It's really cool. Just go on a journey and scroll, because that's what I do. I feel like every time you post, I'm like, I gotta go look.
Yes. And it's, I try to generally, you know, post people's photos when there's like either something about that color that I want people to see, or like something that really just resonated with that person's aura and what I'm like kind of seeing on a more collective level. And yeah, I do feel weird that I post like a lot of my own aura photos, but at the same time, it's like my greatest teacher is my own energy. And especially like, I don't ever share like other people's readings online, but I'm more comfortable sharing my readings online because it is just interesting to get more information on how auras change. Yeah.
Ooh, I had a very strong body reaction when you're like, my energy is the best teacher. What you said. Yeah. I just a side pivot for a second. I feel like, especially with the pandemic and where we are, it's like sometimes really hard to trust ourselves and know what's fear versus like intuition and just doing your own self energy check. So it's like, trust yourself. Absolutely. Best teacher. Oh, sorry. I'm like loving that.
yeah.
So with that said, okay, so we know so far auras can change and yes, they fluctuate. So two questions to that is why do they, like, what are some factors there? And also, do you ever notice trends based on like where the world is and what shows up in auras? So like the pandemic, for example.
Okay. Yes. So I'm going to answer the trends first and move into how auras change. So I started taking aura photos at the end of 2018. The one thing that I have seen that is like very consistent about like the time of year and people's aura colors is around New Year's, people are red. And red is typically a color that indicates a lot of change, a lot of like new beginnings. And red, as the root chakra or the root energy center, rules over how we show up in the physical and the material world. And I really think it's just that like new year, new me is such a persuasive cultural narrative that I like see it in people's energy, which is like, it's interesting.
Yeah, because Thomas's was so red. It was like red and a little purple. So I was like, that explains him to a T. Like, for anyone that knows Thomas, please know. And I feel like halfway through the year almost, he's been very much like exploring and feeling more of himself, which is beautiful. So anyway. That's
exciting.
Yeah.
And then, so doing this since the pandemic, so it has been really interesting. So since, I guess that would have been March of 2020, and between the tornado and the pandemic, I was open for like 3 days in March. And then I guess I was closed for April and opened back up at the end of May 2020. And so after that, like reopening from the pandemic, I have seen a lot more cool towns. And in 2021, actually the color blue was the color that I saw the most. And when we talk about cool towns, those are those like upper energy centers. And those are all about like questioning the human experience, questioning belief systems. And then that, you know, honestly, like in the midst of so much chaos, that was something really inspiring for me to see, was that seeing so many people were out there starting to do this kind of work, this kind of investigation on themselves and what it means for them to be in this world.
Yeah. And that's me. I was very blue. I was like dark blue, 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 a little teal and a little green. And I feel that like all through the pandemic, I just kept asking why, like, why is it this way? And how does that apply to me? And like, why am I, you know, like the existential, not dread, but just like need to know, like I needed it.
Yes. And that's so beautiful. Because it's that idea of like, nothing changes if nothing changes. And until people get really curious about why.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're not going to see more systemic change. Now, as far as how auras change, this is a really wild answer. And the funny thing about talking about how auras change is if you ask 10 different aura readers, you'll get 10 different answers. Just like within most spiritual things, there's not a lot of hard and fast rules. So it's not that one person's theory is right or wrong, but it's about finding what works for you and what works for your practice. Now, I say that the aura camera captures a season of life. And I use that phrase really specifically because it puts it back on my clients to decide what that means for them. At the end of the day, it's not about what I believe. It is about how the experience resonates with my clients. Now, what I do give is I kind of boil how auras change down to three questions. It depends on who you are as a person, where you are in your life, and what you do with your energy. And as those questions really start to shift, as the answers to those questions start to shift, that's really when you tend to see these like sustained changes in your aura. But the thing is like those questions are just going to mean so many different things to different people. And so it's so hard to put this like linear timeline on how auras change.
It makes a lot of sense. I just didn't know if it was something where like you know, when you take your photos, if you notice it like daily, or if it just, like you said, there's like two modes that you're noticing consistently, but have you ever seen like a really, like, I don't know, is there like a certain aura that's like spookier than others? Like, do they, you know what I mean? Like, have you ever seen someone with no aura or like a really dark aura?
I haven't seen somebody with no aura. And I really, so to have no aura, you'd have to be some sort of ghost. I think ghosts have an aura. I just don't think the camera would work for them. And generally what I say is like, if you're a ghost, we have much bigger fish to fry. I have other questions. Now, I have seen people who have like a lot of blocked energy. So sometimes this shows up as places where people have no color or very little color. What they have either looks like very muddy or is just very opaque. And those only tend to show up at like really extreme circumstances. And typically there's extreme situations that you come from people being either incredibly overwhelmed or incredibly exhausted, or it's like there is something that is like literally sucking their energy. I have never had anybody see that show up and be surprised. Like people know, you know, one of the examples I'll give is like one time that happened with a client, and she told me that she was, first of all, a full-time social worker, which is an incredibly demanding career, but she was also taking, she was the full-time caretaker of her mother who was dying of cancer. And she was like, I've really felt like I'm at a breaking point and I can't do it alone anymore. And I was like, well, if you need any sort of affirmation that you need help, it was her Aura photo. So again, that's not that kind of like everyday exhaustion, but tends to show up when there are these like bigger things happening in our lives.
Yeah, that would make so much sense. Cause especially for me, like just being like a Reiki and energy healer is like, I often experience with clients, like they're blocked in a chakra or they have a leak, which I like to call it, which especially for people pleasers, you know, they don't know how to turn off their energy. It's just flowing to anyone who will take it. And I feel like it's the same kind of vibe of like when I'm energy healing, I see it visually sometimes in colors where it's like, ooh, like if you're not grounded, I don't see any red. Like when I'm in that. So that's interesting how that relates when people are going through a similar circumstance. I don't know, just comparing apples to oranges maybe, but I love that.
Interesting. Absolutely. You see like in kind of these places where different types and styles of energy work overlap. Yes.
Yeah. So I feel like we probably should have started with this question, but I reckon we all kind of know what an aura is, but like when someone asks you like, what's an aura? Like, how do you tell them like what that is?
I try to keep it simple. And I say your aura is your human energy field. It is the energy that emanates from you, that you create along with the universe, that you create through your thoughts, your feelings, your choices, your actions, your all. And I mean, it's, you know, I could go into like your aura has these different layers and they mean different things, but I really try to keep it just as like your aura is your human energy field. A lot of people will come in with like a basic idea of what an aura is, but there's just really like so much possibility for what to do with your aura, for what it can all mean. And so to keep it really as open as possible, I keep it very basic. And your aura is your human energy field, the energy you create through thoughts, feelings, choices, and action.
How does the camera capture the aura?
So I use an AuraCam 6000, which is like one of the OGs of Aura cameras. And the camera itself is a biofeedback imaging color spectrometer. I think it's really wild. We live in a future where like I use the word spectrometer all the time, and here we are. So there are hand sensors, and then there is the actual camera. The camera has a really large camera box. And so where the hand sensors are, they are these like silver, they look like hand plates, and those are biofeedback receptors. They're getting biofeedback data from your body. And they're reading various physiological parameters. The way I really boil it down is to thinking about the hand sensors are reading your frequencies, your vibrations, the electric currents that pulse through your body. And it's the hands specifically because hands are energy meridians. And if you are familiar with acupuncture or acupressure even, there is a ton of acupressure points in your hands. It's kind of like the same, reading the same energy points, the hand sensors for the camera do. And that information goes from the hand sensors and it goes to the camera. And there's the large camera box, Within the large camera box, there's patented and proprietary technology that uses these like proprietary algorithms to translate your frequencies into the corresponding color, since color is also a frequency. So that is like the high level of how the camera works. Of course, the camera, it is the only Aura camera that shoots auras on film. And this technology was invented for this camera. My camera got updated in June of 2021, but before that, it was like from the late 70s. And it's just endlessly fascinating. It's an Auracam 6000, also known as a Guy Coggins camera. Guy Coggins is the person who actually invented this technology. Now, there are other Aura cameras out there today. And the thing is that since the technology the Auracam 6000 uses is patented and proprietary, other Aura cameras don't have the same algorithms, and they all mimic the way that the Auracam 6000 works. For me, it was always a very different experience. And so when I started to think about doing this, I really specifically wanted the Auracam 6000 because it was the camera I had had the most meaningful experiences with. And I mean, I had to wait for somebody to sell a camera to be able to get one. Aside from just like the financial aspects of being able to get a camera, it took me years to get a camera because I had to like wait for somebody to sell one.
Wow. Yeah. That's insane. Did you like just see someone listed on like Craigslist, or how does that work? Do they have like sites where people sell them? Like,
Oh my gosh. One really infamously sold on the Goodwill website. But generally, no, there's only one company that makes them, and it was not hard to figure out who they were. And from there, I started contacting them and was like, hey, I would like to buy this camera. And they were like, great, you're going to have to wait. And so eventually they were like, somebody is selling us back a camera. We can refurbish it and sell it back and sell it to you, or you can continue to wait. And so I went, with the refurbished camera. And to be fair, I got into this in kind of a weird time for the Aura camera specifically, because the camera, the Auracam 6000 that I was initially using, the one that was like still in its form since the late 70s, there was just no film left to work with that camera. The last film that was manufactured that worked with that camera was discontinued in 2016. And so you can use discontinued film, but like every supplier in America ran out of that film in 2020.
So that explains the upgrade that you had to get.
Exactly. And so that's when my camera was upgraded, some things in the camera box had to change, but essentially they had to put a modern camera in there. And then the front end of the camera had to change a little bit to work with the specs of the modern camera. But at the time I was trying to buy a camera, the camera manufacturers knew that this was all happening, and they didn't have a solution yet to make the Aura camera work with modern cameras.
I love that. I love the science of it. It's the Virgo in me, I guess. That's like, okay, we love the beautiful Aura, but how does it happen?
It's like endlessly fascinating. And so the science of the camera is based off of something called Carilion photography, which was invented by a biologist in the late 30s who was trying to capture the energy of plants. Now, this biologist was working on the idea of like everything is energy, which was not widely accepted by the scientific community 100 years ago. And so it's been something that's really niche. And then in the 60s and 70s, Guy Coggins was like, I think I can figure out how to make this work for people. And in the development of the camera, it's interesting because he was working with not only scientists, but he worked with psychics, people who have synesthesia, people who see auras, to make sure that there was some sort of correlation between what the camera was seeing and what people who were already doing aura work could see.
Can you see auras? Because I've met some people who can look at someone and see it. And I'm the person who feels it. So if I, you know, like you feel a bad vibe or you feel an energy from someone, like I'm wondering if you can see them.
So yes, and I'm going to give a couple of answers there. So I get what I refer to as more of an energy read. From talking to people who can see auras, it means many different things to many different people. And sometimes it's a color, but sometimes I get more of like a word or a feeling from someone. Now, the thing is, I will say most of the time, I'm just like not tuned in. And for a couple reasons, kind of in like the day-to-day of running the studio, there's just like other things that I'm working on, other things that my energy are going to. But the other thing is I try to keep really strong boundaries around reading other people's auras. And I generally try to not read people's energy unless I have explicit permission to do so.
Allah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I dig that. I feel like there's always like, you know, there's the Pinterest board witchery when you first start out is like how to read auras, stare at something on a white wall for a long time until you see a color appear. And I'm like, wait, I don't know if that's how it works, but okay. Because, oh. You know, there's like clairaudient, clairsentient, like all the clairs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've had people tell me a lot of really wild things, but like people have been like, I took a class on how to read auras. And they had us spin clockwise 37 times, then cross our eyes and look over our left shoulder. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And like the ways that people have been taught, like, is to see auras, like literally they'll be like, the spinning around, but other people will be like, well, if you cross your eyes and look into the sun, and I'm like,
and lose all your vision.
Yes. And a lot of information out there. And like, how do you discern information?
Yeah.
It's also kind of been my experience too. People who are like pretty, a lot of people who like really want to be able to see auras, there's like still some ego work that needs to happen there. Mm-hmm. Because I've seen pretty consistently people who are like, well, I saw so-and-so's aura and it was this, that there's some sort of like projection happening. And it is far more about this like attachment to control, attachment to be like being special or being more than, because you can see auras and other people can't. And that's,
ooh, that's hitting a node where I could say the same thing for those who, I mean, I 100% believe in mediumship and psychic abilities. Obviously I'm a witchy woman with purple hair, duh. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like sometimes people just be making things up because they have that ego work they have not done and they just want to appear special or like a pick me. And I see it all the time too with deity work on TikTok where it's like, oh, well, Loki came to me and said this. I'm like, no, that's not what happened.
Oh, 100%. And I think it shows up. Yeah, I also definitely believe in psychics, believe in mediums, believe in deities, but I see the ways this shows up a lot. And it's like, seeing different people who are like past life work. That's another place I see a lot. And like, there's just a lot of people who've been the same famous person in a past life.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. But yes, I feel like the same thing applies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was gonna say it's the same idea across like all of these different like formats.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like endlessly fascinating. And especially too, when it comes to like readers and messages and stuff, like, again, going back to that idea of like fear-based, I have a lot of clients who are actually scared to get a reading because they had a reader give them a very unethical ego trip reading where that reader, I've actually had a lot of people tell me that, and it's typically they went to see a psychic who also gave them an aura reading, which is first of all a weird thing, but you wouldn't know that's weird without a certain like foundation of spiritual knowledge. But a lot of them go to see a psychic and they give them an aura reading and the psychic tells them that they have no aura because their chakras are dead. But conveniently, this psychic can bring their chakras back to life for the low, low price of $1,400.
Oh, yeah. Let me turn you back on, baby. No. Mm. The anger I feel.
And I have had like a lot of people tell me that, like a shocking amount of people tell me that exact story. And I'm like, first of all, that's not how it works. Chakras don't die. You are alive, not how it works.
Right.
And then where I'm like, that's like a really unethical reading. And I'm so sorry that you had that experience. But anytime a reader is trying to scare you into buying a product, red flag, get out red of
flag. Run. It's like, I get those DMs sometimes from like people who are pretending to be like another like famous spiritual person's account. They're like, honey, would you like a reading? Like I'll do you a reading right now for like, and it's like, I know you're not, no. And then like, let's say you do appease that scammer and you pay for a reading on Venmo. They come back with like the wildest stuff. Like, oh, I can like give you another reading or like help you cure cancer. And like all those scams, like it's just all the red flags.
And it's like so wild because it's proliferated so much because of social media and like the DMs. Mm-hmm. Like that kind of scam used to exist IRL too. Like I remember in like in New York City, a bunch of psychics would like, they'll like grab people in like Times Square or whatever and be like, you have a hex. I need you to know that you carry a curse. But if you pay me, I can remove this from you and your family. And that's just like, I don't know, version of the same thing.
The colors then, I remember from when you gave me my reading, it was very much like the colors are Roy G. Biv, rainbow. There's also white, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they also align with the chakra system, right? Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yes. Yeah. And so definitely like the colors, kind of, yeah, your traditional color spectrum there. And there is alignment with chakra systems. We're most familiar with the traditional 7 chakra system that comes out of Hinduism. Now, chakra is a Hindi word that means energy center. And the idea of energy centers, they show up in like 95-ish different cultures. And so there are all these different like energy center systems really across the world. And they range from saying we have everywhere from 3 chakras to like 144 chakras. So there's really a lot of possibility for what all of that can mean. And so I say this because sometimes people in readings expect a very like kind of on the dot or on the line reading based off of the 7 chakra system out of Hinduism, and they're surprised when some things are different. One of the big differences that shows up most often is between blue and yellow. And so like blue, the color of the throat chakra, yellow, the color of the solar plexus chakra. And I read blue as the color of the seeker of truth and yellow as the color of the storyteller. Because one of my first teachers really taught that within energy centers, the throat chakra is how we decipher what is true for us. And it is through our solar plexus, our relationship to our personal power, we decide what we communicate to the world.
Yeah, I like that. Because I feel like I kind of learned the same. Like it's the solar is very much like the I can energy, and then the throat is very much like, okay, now I'm going to express that vocally versus just like keeping my truth inside and not actually like being outward with it. Yeah. I'm about it.
It's just endlessly fascinating. Definitely within like studying the chakras and studying the energy centers, it's in general, it's been really interesting because I've found that generally the more you read, you can find information to support whatever it is you want to say. And so learning how to decipher information and to kind of find what really resonates, not just, and it's interesting because it's not just about like what resonates with my practice, but what resonates with how the colors show up for clients has been like really interesting.
I feel like when I first started learning about the chakra systems, like you're saying, we get the seven and that's what everyone tends to run with, but I have like a little Swedish mentor that I'm learning about like Nordic culture. And I ask him a lot of the like real deal questions of like, is there an energy system for like the Norse and like the Germanic stuff? And he's like, not really. And I oftentimes see sometimes like people will, they'll take the seven system and then try to morph it for their culture without realizing that you're still appropriating someone else's like whole foundation and trying to make it your own. Like, so I think sometimes like, I mean, I'm sure you've experienced it of the chakra systems being so many different backgrounds. It's a lot of information out there and it's kind of like a brain explosion when you realize that.
Oh, absolutely. And like, absolutely to all of your points there, where I've definitely read people's books who are like just trying to apply the seven chakra system to their culture. And it is like,
yeah,
few yikes along with that. And then it's, I think it's been especially interesting as like we're in a different kind of age for spiritual capitalism and like people trying to sell spiritual products and spiritual theories. And so like there's all these theories from chakras, which are people trying to like rebrand ancient wisdom and say that they came up with it. And I have read some pretty wild things within that just like are so complicated. So it's definitely a very interesting to try to wade through information. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, you being a fellow spiritual business person is like, I feel like I see it and I try to call it out, but also it's not my place to, like, I'm never going to tell someone else how to run their business, but sometimes it is very much like, okay, was that a quote unquote download? Or did your brain just remember something you learned a long time ago and you're trying to make it yours when it's totally not? Not to like switch the energy of this podcast to like throw people under the bus. However, it is a big concern to me. So I'm bringing it up.
It's interesting to watch and to see. Where I just think about the question I always ask myself and I encourage my clients to ask is this a marketing campaign?
Yes.
Is this a message or is this a marketing campaign?
Mm. Yeah. I feel that deeply too. It's like a whole other conversation to be had about like, okay, so we show up we like to show up in our truth. But what does that truth change because you're posting on a platform, or is it the same way? And that's something like I've had to battle with myself of like, I feel obligated to show up for my business on socials in this truth, but it's not my actual truth because of marketing. And like, I work in marketing, digital advertising. I've done social media. It's my background. And it's crazy being that person that like works, it's in music. So I work with artists and I'm like, okay, well, this is how we're going to make you show up on social versus how do you want to show up? Anyway, side plots. Mm-hmm. We love a good side plot, but it's just very interesting how that all ties in.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's like, I'm not a social media person. And if I didn't have to run a business, like have to have it to run a business, I would likely not have social media at this point in my life. And so Finding a way to like show up authentically is like always fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Have you had any struggles with just like the current political geo climate of life and, you know, where we're at? I mean, full transparency, we are coming out of a pandemic. Our rights are being taken away. Like people are being murdered for just existing. Like there's so many bleak and dark things happening. So I'd love to know how you carry on or how you're managing with business and socials in a time where it's like right there. Like,
yes, have an aura photo. The world is on fire, but auras. Yeah. So I'll answer in a couple of ways. One, I'll tell you is actually like, I'm kind of going to segue from social media into this. So within terms of the pandemic, like I still have a mask policy in my shop. And I have had various issues with that, various levels of issues with that. And it's like, by the time you arrive at an appointment with me, you have agreed to a set of terms and conditions that say like, you have to wear a mask. It is in the confirmation email, the reminder email, a reminder text message that says, wear a mask. It's on the door. It is literally as communicated as I can communicate the message.
Yeah, can confirm. I remember seeing every communication. It was like, please put on a mask. And I was like, great, we're putting it on. Like, I know we're in Tennessee and it's been, I mean, you know, it's been, most people think it's still a joke and cool, live your life. But there are people out there that we need to protect. So I put on the mask. It's not hard.
Exactly. I have no interest in like, fighting people on whatever, engaging people with whatever they believe or don't believe about masks. It's just, these are the boundaries for my space.
Yeah. It's your business, your boundaries, your rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have made a couple social media posts about like, if you're going to fight with me about wearing a mask, I don't want your business. And those get the most traffic. Because part of like what really I come back to like having issues with social media is that like the algorithm rewards divisive posts. And I don't have a lot of interest in making divisive posts. And it's like very wild to like see again this way that the micro is the macro, and seeing that like all of this chaos that is happening on this worldwide level is, you know, being given to us every day through the kind of content that social media algorithms show us. So that's definitely just a challenge that I've had, where I've seen these ideas reflected again and again. Now, it is such a wild time to be alive. And I think probably everybody since the Agorian cultures has said this, but thinking about like, what does it mean to do this kind of work? And that is actually like one of the things that led me from working corporate social responsibility to do this full time. I like believe to the core that a better world is possible. And while there's so much that has to change for a better world, for the next world, and I don't necessarily know how or when it is all going to happen, I know that a lot of it, though, is going to have to change, like, not just in the ways that we are in relationship to our communities and to others, but to the way we are in relationship with ourselves. And I really see the work that I do as an aura photographer and an aura reader as giving people another way to know themselves, another way to love themselves. And so I think about it a lot as like, what kind of seeds am I planting? And through the work that I do, I feel like every photo is a seed of possibility, a seed for a better world. And so like, that is one thing that really helps me to do this kind of work. That, you know, on some levels, it's like people don't need an aura photo. You're never gonna like have to have an aura photo to survive. It is a luxury item. It is a luxury thing. But at the same time, like what the service provides to people is a service that is of value.
That was so beautifully said. Like I was just like feeling that in my body again. I was like holding my heart because I think everyone in the spiritual space like has something to offer and really does have gifts. And like, I feel like a lot of our purposes are the same of like helping people really like find their knowing, love themselves, have that inner awakening that we all experience, because otherwise the collective is never going to change. And I know like you and I and everyone, we can't change the world tomorrow. We're actually trying through the work we do. But it's like, it's sometimes we have to focus on the baby steps of just helping someone understand like how to better know themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I think that's a beautiful way to say it is like it. I mean, so much, you know, of our problems, whether, you know, they are our political problems, systems of oppression, systemic oppression, violence, all of it, there's a real disconnect. And it's like, it is much harder to perpetrate violence against others, like when you know yourself. And thinking about like the more like you understand, the more we understand what it is to be human, the more we are able to see humanity in people who aren't us. And it's like that is definitely going to have to happen in order for sustainable systemic change to happen.
Yeah, I'm about that. And also because making somewhat of a joke makes me feel a little bit better about the state of the world. Wow. Let's do that, but also punch Nazis in the face. Like literally, I think the hard thing too is like, I want people to do the work in their own time, but I sometimes my wake up or my work is just to call people out when I see it. Like, mm-hmm. You don't say those things, like get the hell away from me. Like I will be aggressive towards people at this point because mm-hmm. sometimes like the love and light and the little love beams just isn't enough to get people to snap out of it. Sometimes for me, at least them feeling embarrassed by their actions is the wake up call. And then once they get there, okay, let's get an aura photo. Come on in.
it's really interesting. There used to be that meme that was like, it was brick and it said like this rock or this crystal will realign erase the chakras, and I'm like,
this, yes. Which I also heard a thing, this is not even relevant to the podcast, but we're in a time of protesting. Mm-hmm. And just your reminder that if you're at a protest and you see this construction site and there's some bricks there that just look too enticing, mm-hmm. don't pick them up. It's just the powers that be, quote unquote, trying to see how violent people will get. So don't pick up the bricks, cans of soup or whatever they say, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not as involved as I once was, but I have been involved in some different organizing groups and definitely taking so direct action training about how to take direct action at protests. And like so much about people who incite violence at protests, people who incite violence to turn protests into riots. Like there's historically so much evidence that those are plants.
Oh yeah.
Like it's just really wild.
Yeah. Like I remember, I feel like this sounds so sad, but in a way I notice it now being the person I am is like, it happens in cycles. Like, I feel like we have the war, we have, you know, Black Lives Matter, then we have women's rights, and then it circles back again. And it's like, okay, how many times do we have to do this? But we're going to keep fighting the fight because it's necessary. Anyway, like, I just noticed sometimes, like, during the BLM stuff, a few months back, they, like, there's always, like, one cop who's dressed up differently just to, like, start stuff. And I'm like, come on now, like, please don't do this. Like, many issues.
Exactly. And that's like kind of the thing too, is like with many issues, there has to be many solutions.
Yes.
I was just reading Bram Das's big book the other day. I was like flipping through it because I was looking for something specific. And I landed on one of the pages that, and this was written, you know, in the civil rights movement of the 60s, the anti-war movement of the 60s. And one of the pages in the book is like, you can, we live in a time, they talked to, he talked to, but like, we live in a time of protest, but you can only protest something that you can love. And so it's interesting to think about this, like, again, this kind of duality where it's like, we protest these terrible things that are happening because we love the people they're happening to. We protest these terrible things that are happening because we love the possibility of a better world more. And I don't know like really where I'm going with this. It's just like something that popped up in my studio when I was at work yesterday. And I was like, I've just been thinking about it.
It's nice, but not nice. I say this is like a word of mouth, but it's nice to know I'm not alone in that though. Like really struggling right now to just like put out offerings and just do the business things when everything's going on. So I think like you were saying, just being more open with your gifts in order to help people is truly what the purpose is, and that's what we can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's reassuring.
Absolutely. And I will say there is another astrologer I really love, Rob Breezny, I think is how you say his name. His Instagram handle is like Rob Breezny Truth Rooster. And his, like a lot of the foundation of his work is kind of shifting from paranoia, the idea that everything can go wrong, to, he has a different word for it that is escaping me because of course it would right now. But instead of going from like everything can go wrong, shifting that to everything that can go right. And I really try to like balance those ideas, right? Between seeing the ways things can go right. And he works a lot with like, he has a thing he calls the like Truth and Beauty Lab, which talks about different statistics about beauty in the world and truth in the world, and how we actually do live in a time where there is less violence than there has been. And like, there are good things happening, but we don't live in a culture that wants us to think about the good things that are happening, because it's a lot harder to sell products to people who aren't scared.
Yep. Or feeling like they're less than, or they need something, or they're lacking. Like it's all fear driven. Yeah,
exactly. yeah. Right. And so I really love his work, and it's a lot. But again, like that idea of like, if you don't want to wear a mask, I don't want your business. If you aren't comfortable with me being like, Black Lives Matter, abortion is healthcare, I don't want your business. So
right. Take that energy elsewhere, Karen of the world. I feel like when I got my reading done from you, you know, what you told me and how you explained it and everything was really eye-opening for me and affirming at the same time. I posted about this and said the same sentiment. And then from there, it was kind of like this is what we can do. Like, this is how I can pivot to reach where I'm trying to reach, self-heal and all of that. So like, what do you do like after you get a read? Like, what's the most appropriate thing to do in your opinion?
So this is one of the most exciting things where it's like a very choose your own adventure situation. And this is maybe one of, like, I say this work is endlessly fascinating, and I say this all the time and I so genuinely mean it, but people come to get aura photos for so many different reasons. And there's like so many different ways to take that information. I generally say that an aura photo is a visual affirmation. And like, I encourage all the magical intuitive beings that come to see me to like do what they're called to do with that information. One thing that I really try to do in my reading style is I try to do less personality diagnosis and more like investigative questions. And I spend a lot more time giving questions to clients than I give definitive sentences. And that's like for I'm very consciously trying to do that, because it is, again, at the end of the day, about how all of this information lands with the clients. And so in terms of like what people do with it, I've seen people work with the color that they like felt in their body that they were excited to see. I've seen people work with the color they hated seeing because they wanted to like cycle through that, or they wanted the lesson that was coming from the resistance to that color. I've also seen people take it and work with the color that they didn't see in their aura at all and they wanted to. And when I say work with colors, sometimes this is, you know, people doing more traditional like candle magic, color magic. Sometimes it's as simple as just noticing synchronicities around that color. But sometimes it's eating that color. Sometimes it's wearing that color. Sometimes it's meditating with that color. There's so much possibility. And again, I will say too, like sometimes people, it goes back to working with the chakra or chakras that are in relationship to that color. And it is endlessly fascinating to see what people do with this information. But again, the biggest thing is like, this is a visual affirmation, this like visual invitation for you to know your energy. And it's just so cool.
Oh yeah. I love color magic. I feel like they're like, I get real into it sometimes to down to like my eyeshadow color or like what my clothes are, just to make sure, like, if like I'm going into like a big meeting or something, like I'm like, okay, I'm gonna wear maybe a grounding color. If like, I mean, my hair color even is like my protection, you know, like some witches like to veil. For me, it's just like, I put the color in my hair. That's my protection, I guess. But also too, like you said, eating different colors, like there's some times where I'm like, I'm just gonna eat this, like grounding orange colored, red colored foods.
Exactly.
So, color magic is dope. I feel like it's not talked about enough. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And it's like just so interesting because color magic, again, is one of these ideas of kind of like everything is energy, everything is color. Every way you can work with color is a way to work with color magic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like even the outdoors, like from like outdoorsy people, like you're surrounded by green. Like, please tell me that's not color magic. Like nature knows what it's doing.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. I love that. It's nice to know, like at the base level, you leave with a really cool photo and some info, but at the exponential level, it's choose your own adventure and let it guide you. It's beautiful.
Yes.
Incredible. Well, Jane, in the episode notes, there will be all of your contact information. So if anyone wants to get a reading from you or connect on socials, they can. But do you have anything going on currently or any special readings you're offering that people may find interesting?
Not right now. I'm kind of the Trader Joe's, where I focus on consistency.
We love that. Honestly, we love.
I will though, the dates aren't final, but I'm going to be doing a couple of classes this year. We're actually like teaching more about what the aura is and how to work with your aura, as well as teaching like auras and color magic.
Oh, incredible.
Yeah. And so like, that'll all be posted on social media when I get it all together, when I finalize some things.
Heck yeah, that's so exciting. I'm sure there are tons of people who want to know more about that. I mean, obviously that's why I'm here, so hello. Perfection.
It is truly just like endlessly fascinating, and I'm really excited to work with people in more of a workshop environment. Yeah.
Love. And then the last thing I love to ask guests is if they have any, not to put the pressure on you, but just a final message or something that you would like to share with the listeners that you think intuitively they might need.
Yes. So I'm going to kind of roll with how we were talking about like what it means to do this work while the ocean is on fire. And I think that there's something really beautiful to that idea of like reverent irreverence, and like things are profound and they are absurd. There was that meme floating around of like 555 on a microwave, and it was like, I'm sorry, you think angel numbers are dumb because you can't be inspired by a microwave, but I can. Like, things are silly. You know, it doesn't, everything is very serious and very silly at the same time. But like, don't be afraid to be absurd, to be silly, and to see the joy that exists in these heavy times.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. If you loved what you heard, smash that subscribe button, and please be sure to rate and review on iTunes to help further educate and elevate our fellow witches. If you need a little extra magic in your life, I invite you to connect with me on Instagram at wellandwitchy, and check out my website, wellandwitchy.com. Remember, witches, you are limitless. You are powerful, and you create your reality by your divine design. Now go out there and make some magic happen. And until next time, be well, be witchy.